chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have John O'Leary on the show today. John is a number one best-selling author, beloved keynote speaker, and the host of the podcast Live Inspired. John, I am so excited that we can make this happen. We kind of like found a spot and we said, let's do it.
Lisa, we have taken the bull by the horns, and to see your face and to hear your voice, it's great to be back with you. So thanks for having me on the show.
When I think about you, John, I just think, because I've read your book On Fire, I've given your book away to a lot of people. You're welcome. But when I think about you, I think, oh, everybody knows John O'Leary's story, but there may be one or two people out there that don't. So I want to just dive right in, because there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But you grew up in De Pere, right here in St. Louis. It's a suburb of St. Louis, or municipality, if you
will. And I'm a proud St. Louis, Missouri guy. I love the Midwest. I love where we live. I love our region. I love our country. And I've had the honor lately as a speaker to travel the world. And man, I think sometimes we get so stuck on what is wrong that we miss all that is right. And as I look around the world, I see an awful lot that is incredibly beautiful. And part of it is my own backyard. So I was blessed to grow up to two parents named Susan and Denny. I had a family with five siblings, two golden retrievers, cats, turtles, rabbits. Man, we had it all. We had an acre backyard, church on Sundays, blueberry pancakes afterwards, fried chicken dinners Sunday nights with grandma and grandpa on both sides. And as I've told you before, what I remember most about those evenings is my grandfather Kilker talking about if he had it worse in the Pacific in the Navy in World War II, or if grandfather O'Leary in the Army in Europe, in the European theater, had it worse. And we lived the American dream. We were so blessed that it is possible, and I think likely, that we missed how fortunate we were, how privileged in some regards we were.
Oh my goodness. Just salt of the earth background, right? And just good solid values. I couldn't agree with you more. I love the Midwest. I love where we live. So in 1987, you had something happen in your life that was a pivotal point for you. And for those two or three people that don't know your story, I want you to tell your story if you would.
Yeah. The background to the question, because it's such a beautiful question, is this, though. It took me 20 years after the story I'm about to share with you to even begin to embrace the simplicity and the complexity and the challenges and the blessings of what happened to me on this day. And it is this. I had witnessed little boys in my neighborhood playing with fire and gasoline in early January 1987. They would sprinkle gasoline on a sidewalk. They would strike a match, stand back 2 feet, throw a match on top. And it would just jump to life. And we were little boys, man, growing up in this community, and it's safe and nobody was watching. And as I'm looking at these boys, I'm thinking, if they can do that and get away with it, so can I. And so that weekend, my father was at work. My mother was out with two of my sisters. The house was mine. I bent over a can of gasoline in a garage. It was 5 gallons, completely filled to the rim, lit a piece of cardboard on fire, bent down next to it. And the plan, Lisa, was to pour just a little bit of gas to watch it sparked to life like I'd seen these older guys do. And before the liquid came out, the fumes rushed out of that container. It created a massive explosion. It split the can in two, and it launched the little boy, John O'Leary, 20 feet against the far side of the garage. that is a mighty inflection point and just the beginning of a very difficult and yet in time, a very blessed story.
Mm-hmm. But at the time, your brother maybe that came and got the rug from the foyer or something. Is that what happened?
I mean, it's a pretty remarkable story that I seldom share live. But this one I'm glad you asked about because it's worth sharing, because a lot of times people who hear a story like this, or they hear about a business owner that grew a huge top line revenue and bottom line profitability, and they think, well, that's them. That's John O'Leary's story of being burned, or that's Tom Hill's story of growing the business, or whatever it might be. What about the ordinary people like you and me, though? I would consider myself extraordinarily ordinary. And where I get my strength is in the ordinary heroes who showed up for me. And the very first hero who showed up for me on January 17, 1987, was not a firefighter or a police officer or some heroic combat veteran. It was my brother. He was sleeping in the basement. He heard the explosion. Then he heard the screams for help. It blasted out the windows throughout our entire house. So this was a mighty explosion. He came up from the basement where he slept. He ran into the front hall, and on top of the hall rug stood his 9-year-old brother, John. And I had flames, Lisa, leaping 3 feet off of my body. I'm an inferno. I'm slowly burning to death. And my brother sees this and he's not ready for it. And I see my brother, Jim, and I'm not ready for him. Jim's my older brother. He'd never done anything nice for me in our entire lives together. So when I was on this rug praying for a hero, it wasn't exactly Jim I was hoping and praying for. And yet this was his day. This was the moment for him to wake up. Like, you need to hear that, listeners, and John O'Leary and everybody else. You need to wake up and embrace where you are and what's possible in your life going forward from this moment. Jim embraced the moment. He picked up a rug. He ran over to me. The flames leapt 3 feet off of me. He burned himself in the process. He wrapped me in that little blanket. He carried me outside, saved my life, rolled around on top of me. He calls 911, makes sure that my sisters are out of the house, makes sure that our pets are out of the house. But the lifesaver of the year in 1987 was a 17-year-old who changed, who embraced where he was and what he could do in his next step, his next breath. It's an opportunity, I think, for all of us every day of our lives.
Yes, and thank God for him. John, I remember you loved baseball. You wanted to be a Cardinals baseball player.
Right.
Because you watched so much baseball, you knew the sports announcers' voices, you knew all this. And I want you to tell the story of Jack Buck, because I still remember that story. I tell that story now.
So for the listeners who may not know baseball, or they may not know the Midwest, or they may not know the voice or the name Jack Buck, he was the voice of the Cardinals for almost 5 decades. He's a Hall of Fame announcer. He's a Hall of Fame human being. He's a guy that I'd never met as a child, but I went to bed every single night listening to his voice. My mom and dad would tuck me in and we'd say our prayers. They'd turn off the light, walk down the hallway, and about halfway down the steps, I knew they weren't coming back. So that's when I would grab my little radio from a drawer, plug it in, turn it on, and listen to the baseball game. So I knew baseball and I knew Jack. And I also needed some encouragement after being burned on all fronts. But one of the most significant is I was burned on 100% of my body. 87% of the burns were third degree. I'm wrapped from head to toe with bandages. I'm tied down to a bed. I can't breathe on my own. So they put a trach, a respirator, into my lungs. So now I can breathe, but I could not eat or drink and I could not talk. So I got a lot of challenges. And also due to swelling, my eyes were swollen shut. So as a 9-year-old boy going through this difficult journey physically and emotionally and spiritually, it affects you in all areas. I'm dying and I need hope. And the day after I come into the hospital, the door opens up into this hospital room, and I'll truncate the story a little bit, but I hear the footsteps, I hear a chair, and then I hear a voice, and it's the voice of a guy named Jack Buck, the Cardinal Hall of Fame announcer. And he says to me, "Kid, wake up. You are going to live. You are going to survive. Keep fighting. John O'Leary Day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile." And then he goes, "Kid, are you listening?" And I try to nod my little head, and he goes, "Good. Keep fighting. John O'Leary Day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile." And he stood up, he walked out of that room, Lisa. He left me tied down in darkness by myself. When he left me, though, he left me changed, completely holy. He left me not full of despair, but full of hope. And this very crystal clear view of John O'Leary Day at the ballpark, I'll never forget the buzz I had internally of something to move toward. Jack came in one time. I learned later on that he walked out. He started weeping as soon as he made it into the hallway. And one of the doctors or nurses told him that the little boy was going to die, that there's no hope. And by the way, we're being fed this lie all the time. If you read any headline ever these days, this is not new to COVID-19. It's not new to race relations. It's not new to a dawning recession. 94% of the news stories, according to Harvard Business Review in 2018, were negative. So during a period of time when everything was good, supposedly, 94% of what you read and what you witnessed on news was negative. So we get told stuff all the time. What do you do with that stuff? Because the future's not yet determined. Jack was told that the little boy was going to, he takes it home, he cries, he prays, and he reflects. What more can I do? It's a powerful question. What more can I do? The following day, Lisa, the man stepped back into the darkness of my little hospital room, and I heard the voice cut through the darkness one more time saying, kid, wake up. You are going to live. Keep fighting. John, another day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile. And those visits went on the 5 months that I was in hospital.
Oh, what a story. I mean, I still get really teary-eyed just hearing that story. And I've heard that story so many times, John. But I remember, I think your mom was trying to get you to start writing. He had told you, he said, if you will write a note to a Cardinals baseball player, I will bring you back a signed ball.
That's right. I think they were in cahoots on this one. Kids are easily tricked into doing whatever you want them to do if you motivate them appropriately.
Yes.
And by the way, that's also true for team members and executives and boards. Find what turns them on and then get out of the way. Mm-hmm. What mom was doing is she was saying, baby, will you learn how to write again? You'll go back to school.
Yes.
I don't want to go to grade school. And then comes along Jack Buck and says, hey, if you want a baseball, write a note. And so I do. My first note goes out to Ozzie Smith. I get the baseball. And a couple of days later, I send another note. And then I get another baseball. And then another note. And then another baseball. And by the end of 1987, it's a remarkable story. We're fast-forwarding through some of the emotion. But I hope you're getting the leadership capabilities that this man is modeling. 1987, the man sent me 60 baseballs, encouraging me to write 60 thank you notes. Not only filling a dresser with balls. Like, that's nice. That's success. He taught a little boy how to write. He taught a little boy with no fingers and no chance at life how to write, how to take a big, mighty step forward toward possibility.
Such a wise man. I want to give a shout out to Julie, happens to be a friend of mine. So I want to give a shout out to Julie. I told her I love your dad because of what he did for John.
Are you talking about Julie Buck?
Yes. Yes.
You give Julie Buck a second shout out from her friend, John. So it's been a while since I've seen Julie, but Julie, I tell your dad's story almost every day. I never tire of it. And I hope it does half the justice and half the generosity to those who hear it that your dad gave me and so many others. And now that you are blessing others with your own life, Julie. So how cool to have Julie Buck as a listener.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I want to read something because when Jack died, you said you went to the funeral, but you ended up turning around. Because you said you got there and you saw the who's who of St. Louis and you're like, who am I? But you said, I'm not going to live my life any more less than I actually am. I can allow this thing to beat me down of who I wasn't and what is lousy I was, or I can allow it to become a redemptive moment. And that was another pivotal point for you.
That's a moment by moment decision, whether you are a lousy friend to a Hall of Famer named Jack Buck, and you, while he's in hospital for 5 months, the exact same amount of time that I spent in hospital, I never visited my friend Jack because I never felt worthy to go down there. And then when my friend passed away, I did not feel worthy to go to the funeral, but was invited by the Buck family to attend. So I put on my nicest $84 suit and tie, threw it on, hopped into my old beat up Jeep, drove out to this big, beautiful Presbyterian church in St. Louis County. Got my tie a little bit more tightly around my neck, looked to my left and saw this big, beautiful car pull up next to me and a Hall of Fame football player get out of it. And then to my right was another celebrity. And then I looked in the mirror behind me and I saw the ownership team for the St. Louis Cardinals. And like you said, Lisa, the who's who, real people, real stars, real celebrity, people who actually belonged. And as a 24, 25-year-old, that was not me. I was missing my fingers. I was scarred from my neck to my toes. I had little confidence. Don't be fooled by the shoulders back and the guy walking with a goofy grin. I lacked confidence utterly. I didn't belong in many of the rooms that I stepped into, and I certainly did not belong that day, I thought, at that funeral. And so I made this decision to pull out of the parking lot. I drove about 3 miles down street, and then I just pulled the car over onto the shoulder. And man, I had an ugly cry, like the kind where you are using the sleeves of your sport coat, and then you tie around on that side, you switch sides. It got messy for a while. And by the time the tears finally dried up enough that I could drive again, I was going to go back to the funeral and say, man, I'm going. but it was too late. I'd missed my chance. It had already been more than an hour. But I made a decision, like you're saying that day, that you can either continue to live in the shadows or you can be redeemed through these experiences. I don't think we realize in real time what's about to happen, but in making that decision, it changed the entire rest of my life. The way I felt about myself, the words I spoke, the words I chose not to, who I said thank you to, who I chose not to invest time with any longer, where I chose to serve. I became a hospital chaplain. I started volunteering in the same way that Jack served me. I became a big brother through Big Brothers Big Sisters, an organization I'm still highly involved with because I think you touch one person's life, you can change the world. You do that at scale with enough other people, you can really change a problem and make it into a blessing. I started speaking around the world. And so it was a slow embrace of what happened. But it began by recognizing that no longer do I need to hide out away from who I was. I need to embrace it full tilt.
Absolutely. Well, we're in a time now where it could be a pivotal point. I mean, we can say, you know, we're just going to hunker down and, you know, or we can say, okay, what are the blessings? And I love this analogy. Francis Chan uses this about the treadmill that we've all been on. We're on this 200 mile an hour treadmill. It's time to step off maybe and be a little introspective and do a reset. So I want to talk about that because I know that's going to help our listeners, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be back with John O'Leary.
Are you an IT executive with years of experience? Are you energized when you empower others? If I've piqued your interest thus far, you may be a great mentor for the TechLX program in St. Louis. TechLX prepares rising IT leaders to tackle today's challenges and prepare for tomorrow's demanding roles by pairing them with senior IT executives like yourself. Mentors receive coaching from technology partners and will be invited to all TechLX networking events featuring outstanding speakers of the IT industry. To apply, visit tpi.co/TLX.
Welcome back. So, John, we are in some unprecedented times with the pandemic that we're all going through, terrible things. I mean, health concerns for people. People have lost loved ones. People have lost jobs. You know, this is not the first crisis that we've gone through. However, this is a global crisis. I mean, we're all in the same boat. And obviously, you have faced crisis yourself. I mean, what would you say to the listeners about, say, if you've lost your job? I mean, how do you even start to navigate?
So the very first thing when something tragic is happening is not to sugarcoat it. I think it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry. It's certainly okay to be disappointed with the way things might be trending, whether it's societally, if that's something that rubs you the wrong way, with economies, that's something that affects all of us, or specifically if you've lost a job. That's something that affects currently, I believe, 40 million United States citizens, but it's affecting a lot more than that around the world. This is a crisis experience for all of us. What we need to eventually do is, though, to come out of that rut and start to imagine what remains possible in front of us. And there are some ways we can do that. This is going to sound trite, possibly, and maybe unhelpful during a time of crisis, but I don't believe it to be so. I think it's actually critical. It's the first step toward resiliency and grit. And it's actually to show some gratitude for what we already have. When the life seems to be falling apart around us, it's very easy to only see the things that are out of place. And it's very common. And if you read any headline these days, this will back you up and reinforce that very emotion. So for me, what I do every single morning is I wake up early, I go outside, I grab a cup of coffee, I look east while it's still dark outside, and I wait for the light to cut through the darkness. I think it's the coolest experience of the day, and most of us oversleep by a couple hours to get as much sleep as possible and as little life as possible. So if you want to get a little bit more out of yours, I strongly encourage you to wake up a little bit early.
Like, now, what time do you have to wake up? 5:30?
5:30 will ensure that you see the best of it. And I take a list of things that I'm grateful for. So every morning I make an inventory of what I have. Sometimes I write a gratitude list. Sometimes I write love letters to family members, parents, siblings, wife, you know, people you overlook because they're just so close to you, kids. Write love letters. When, John? That's hard. We're all busy. Get up a little early and it will set you apart. It'll also set you on the right path. So that's one thing that I've done that I've found to be incredibly effective. And lately, we can talk about having an infinite lens on what remains possible. But if you have a longer term horizon on what life looks like, not just today or next week or what can I get accomplished between now and the end of 2020, but if you look at it through a life lens, by the time I turn 85, what really matters? One way to understand this exercise, I used to serve as a hospital chaplain for kids. but I got my training with an adult hospital system. And I walked into a patient's room one time and the gentleman said to me, John, if you'd seen me years ago, you would have met a man on top of the world. I had it all. Great job. I was running my own business. But John, as I raced forward, I lost the very things that ultimately mattered most to me. I worked so hard that I lost my marriage. I went through so much stress organizationally and professionally that I turned to drugs and alcohol, which affected my relationship and then eventually cost me my relationship with my three daughters. He said, I lost everything, including my health. And then he took a deep breath, Lisa, and he said, John, I've reached the end of my life. I've climbed the ladder to the very tippity top, only to realize I had the thing leaned against the wrong darn wall. And as our friend Francis Chan has said, nothing in life would be worse than to become successful at things that just ultimately don't matter. And I have a feeling as we race through life, many of us are becoming wildly successful at things that if you really add them up, don't matter at all. Not at all. And it's important as we go through life that we take inventory, that we take pause of the things that matter. I'm not telling you not to climb. I want you to race. I want you to achieve as much as you possibly can. But I don't want you to trade significance for success. I think life is far too short. And sometimes these periods of abrupt change, like losing a job or getting a diagnosis or being burned, can force us to recognize what ultimately matters. And if that is the season that you are currently in, rather than racing away from it, I say embrace it. Learn the lessons from the season, take inventory of what you have that is good, and then reset and pivot into this change, because I remain convicted that the best days remain in front of us.
I love that. Well, that reminds me, your grandfather said that. I think he said something like, you know, it's the lessons that you learn that you apply.
That's right. We weren't the greatest generation because we went through all that. We're the greatest generation because we went through all that. We learned from that. And now we're doing something because of all that.
Yeah.
And whether it's COVID-19 or injustices in the marketplace, headwind with recessions, challenges with your job or your relationships at home or addictions, if we can learn the lessons through these crises that we face and then apply them going forward, these won't be wasted.
Right. They're too hard. Lessons are too hard. Let's don't waste them. So I want to talk just a little bit about your latest book, another bestseller, In Awe. And I'm not all the way through the book, but everything I've read so far, I'm captivated. And you know, one of the things that you talk about is really, it's really to inspire people to go back to the way we were as children and to awaken the senses maybe that have died, like wonder. Talk a little bit about your book. And I really want you to tell the story real quickly about Miss Bartello. Because I thought that was really, I mean, your mom was a very wise woman.
Thank you for that. And you know, you can't pick your parents. And I was blessed to have remarkable ones. So I'll end your question by sharing the story of Mrs. Bartello and how I became familiar with her services. But the book itself, the book is called In Awe. It's our second book that I've written. The first one was called On Fire. And I found myself, Lisa, all the time on the road, speaking to these wonderful organizations, these fancy conference centers, these five-star hotels, man. And people were kind of yawning as they got up. And, you know, we weren't even going out to the beach to see where we were in paradise. And we were mad that the cell phone reception wasn't working perfectly in the conference center and that the jet was going to take 20 minutes late and really disrupt our days, and how mundane and difficult our adult days were. That's what I saw in that part of my life. But when I'm working, I like to not only speak to organizations, but I like to, in that community, wherever I am, also go into schools. So I would always take a little day trip away from the fancy Ritz-Carltons or wherever they might put me up and then hang out with some kids. And I would notice with schools that these kids would come skipping into the classroom, not walking with their shoulders slumped, bummed out of how miserable their lives are. No, shoulders back, humming, singing, praying, laughing, smiling, eyes looking up, eyes giving off joy. When I asked questions, their hands would all pop up. They were exuberantly, passionately, optimistically living their lives. And then I would come home and I would see it in my own children, four little healthy kids who were so fired up for life, in awe of everything. And I wondered as a dad, what is it that they have? All kids, not just mine, not just the ones I was lucky enough to speak to, all kids. What is it that they have that we have lost sight of as adults, as we endure the misery, the monotonous of these days that we must somehow weather together? What have we lost? And if we return to who we once were, what might happen? And so through 3.5 years of research, we really figured this thing out, I think, and unpacked what the DNA is of a child. They have five senses that we have lost sight of, the sense of wonder, That's when you talked about this idea of being inquisitive about everything. They're fully immersed in whatever they're doing. It's very hard to get their attention from whatever they're doing because they're completely doing that one thing. Multitasking is what we adults do, but all research says it's actually completely ineffective. They don't multitask. They're highly effective at doing one thing at a time. They also belong to not only themselves, but to one another. So they have this incredible connection to each other and to themselves, to life. And then finally, they live through their lives through the sense of freedom. They're just completely free. What a gift it is to be free. So those are the five senses that we unpack in the book and on. And I share stories, the research, some of the ideas, and some of the outcomes. If we chose to do this as adults, what might happen?
Well, I highly recommend everyone get the book. I have it on my Kindle. And like I said, I'm captivated. But you'll have to get the book. We're just going to give you a little teaser. You need to read the story about Miss Bartello. Because I just laughed my head off.
A poor lady.
Yeah, you got to read that story. You got to get the book so you can hear the story. So, John, this is called Something Extra. It was inspired by her daughter, Allie, that has Down syndrome. She's got an extra 21st chromosome. She's got a lot of something extras, but we all do. What is that something extra that you believe every leader needs?
Because of the way you formed the question, I'm going to go in a way that I would never have gone under other circumstances, but something extra and talking about your daughter. One of the stories I unpack in Sense Number 4, that's a section on belonging, is a coffee shop in South Carolina that hires only people with special needs. And there was a woman there one time who was carrying a baby who was also diagnosed with Down syndrome. And the woman was really struggling with this, really struggling with, my gosh, what curse is this? Should I even take this pregnancy all the way to full term? Should I do this? So she goes to this coffee shop. She orders her coffee without caffeine. Her husband gets his coffee with a lot of caffeine. They sit down and they just take inventory of what's happening around them. And then the mom of this child, this is their first child, comes up to the lady behind the register and says, hey, I want you to know that we are expecting a daughter. And the little girl behind the register goes, oh, congratulations. And then the mom goes, but here's something extra. You need to know that our little daughter is going to be born with Down syndrome just like you. And with that, this little girl comes, and the little girl's 23 years old, comes from behind the register, puts her arm around the mom and the dad and says, hey, everybody, I need your attention. These guys are expecting a child. And the coffee shop explodes with applause. And then the little girl goes, and one more thing, she's going to have Down syndrome. And the entire coffee shop again erupts with applause. And so as we're looking for something extra in our lives, as we go through it organizationally or as a family or as you're expecting a child or not, because sometimes it's a thing you're not expecting that is the something extra that you ought to be grateful for. I think my something extra today is to be grateful for what shows up. We always want to control what happens. We want to stay in our lane and influence our teams and lead effectively and all this stuff. And that's fine. We got to do that at some point. But gosh, can you imagine going through life with your hands completely open? Just giving pure thanks for what you got and then being able to celebrate with those who aren't even sure if that's a blessing or a curse until they see you. And then they realize undoubtedly what a blessing this indeed is. So I encourage you to recognize that something extra today is to be grateful for what you got.
I love that. I've never had anybody say that, John, but that is so poignant. It really is. So thank you so much. Well, you know, I usually give people the opportunity to pitch something or to talk about something, tell our listeners about something. And, you know, unless you wanted to talk about something else, I'm thinking we need to tell people how they can get your book.
You can learn more about John O'Leary and the work we do. It's a collection of people. I've learned throughout my entire life that I'm all not that good. Mrs. Bartello, when people get the book, they'll learn about her and they'll realize how little John does by himself, and yet how much we have done collectively. It's an incredible story. And you can learn about that story and all the other stories if you go to readinawe.com. That's where our social media links are. That's where our podcast is. And that's where the link to the book In Awe and On Fire are as well.
Very good. Well, John, this has just been such a delight. I am so glad that we were able to make this happen because I just know that your story is going to mean a lot to our listeners. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Well, give your daughter a big, huge hug, something extra tonight when you get home, and tell her John O'Leary loves her. And tell her thank you for teaching the rest of us how to live and lead, because in the busyness of life, we forget.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.